From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. In 1858, a slave ship, the Wanderer, overloaded with more than 480 Africans, landed just off of Georgia's coast at Jekyll Island. It was 50 years since the U.S. prohibited importation of slaves. Its inhumane and horrendous journey contributed to the origin story of Georgia's Gullah Geechee community. A documentary premiering November 13th on GPB tells the story of The Wanderer, a 90-plus-foot racing yacht used to import slaves from Africa to Georgia.
After about 43 days, The Wanderer reached the coast of Georgia. Cory dropped anchor about 100 to 200 yards off the beach of Jekyll Island. They started to ferry the Africans to the shore. And when all was said and done, 409 Africans were landed. So about 80 died on the passage over.
I am joined by filmmaker John Weatherford. He is also, Tyler Bagwell is also a filmmaker who worked on it, and an associate professor at the College of Coastal Georgia. John Weatherford's in the studio. Hello.
Good morning.
And Tyler is on the line with us. Hello, Tyler.
Good morning.
And also Griffin Lotson. He is joining the conversation from Jekyll Island. He is a descendant of those carried by the Wanderer. And Griffin, so great to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So, John, first, what did the Wanderer look like? This was a yacht. It was a racing schooner.
Absolutely so. It started out its life in the New York Yacht Club, and it was a racing ship. And that's what got the attention of Charlie Lamar of Savannah, who came up with the scheme to turn it into a slave ship because it was fast, and that's what everybody wanted, because Charlie wanted to take a ship that would be very, very fast. It was about a 43-day voyage at the time to get back from Congo to Jekyll Island, and he was packing as many Africans into the ship as he possibly could, 16 inches of space per person for 43 days to get them back, and the notion was he wanted to keep the fewest number possible from dying, so that's why he wanted a fast ship.
Was the boat disguised to transport slaves?
It wasn't disguised, but they kept the, it's technically called a bergee, the pennant of the New York Yacht Club. They kept that on the ship, and they had the full New York Yacht Club attire, and when they would take the ship around off the coast of Georgia and off the East Coast, they would leave those New York Yacht Club trappings on the ship so that people thought they were just sailing around having a grand time. But again, Charlie was broke. He needed to get money, and the scheme he came up to get money with was he'll go over, fill the ship up with African captives, bring them back to the U.S. and sell them as slaves.
Well, it was a really lucrative trade at that point, the domestic slave trade. But Tyler, how about the people who were on board? John mentioned that they were from Congo. How were they kidnapped in Africa?
Well, it looks like through tribal wars. And basically, there would be slave traders on the coast, and other African tribes would have wars. And then this is one way, of course. And they would then, the losers of the battle, of course, became slaves, and they were brought to the coast. And then, of course, they were sold from, in our case, the Congo River.
So it must have been horrific, as described, 487 people packed onto this boat. And when it reached Jekyll Island, people were dispersed, but 40, I think, from if I remember correctly from the documentary, were left on the island. Now, Griffin, is this a revelation to you? How much of did you know about the Wanderer and your own family's history?
Yes. Earlier, I did not know much at all. It was through one of my relatives, Amy Lotson Roberts, that sent me down the rabbit hole. And once I get a little bit of information, then I do all the research I can. So it was exhilarating on one end, maybe sad on another, that my journey started in such a horrific way.
Well, you are a member of this Gullah Geechee community. What is the connection between the Wanderer and the Gullah Geechee people? That some of them stayed there, lived there, built families there, and contributed to this culture?
Oh, yes. Well, the uniqueness, of course, of the Gullah Geechee Quarter, as we call it, fortunately or unfortunately, we all landed here because of our very special skills. We know how to deal with agriculture, and the slave masters, they couldn't handle those mosquito bites quite as well as we could, so we could survive. And we had absentee landlords a lot. So in other words, when the mosquitoes were real bad, they went back up to Philadelphia, and we had to rough it down here. So the connection, we develop our own style. Like we might say things like, "Ha ana fadu, come ya disha that day." I know exactly what I'm saying. It's English, but some of our patois are mixture of our own African language from Africa, which we still retain today. So this is great that more people learn about this history.
What did you just say?
Well, ha ana fadu is what when you would say good morning, first thing we would say ha ana fadu when you walk up to the door. And that's and things like come ya disha that day, of course, I would say come here. And if I had something in my hand, it would say come ya then that day. If I say that day, I'm holding it. And so it's kind of just a language. We know exactly what we say. And if I was talking with another Gullah, Geechee, it would be very easy. And, of course, often when we in meetings, a lot of people do exactly what you did. They'll whisper to their neighbor and say, what did they say?
That is Griffin Lotson. He's a descendant of a person who was carried to the United States on the Wanderer from Africa, a slave ship that landed on the coast of Georgia back in 1858. Also with us, Tyler Bagwell and John Weatherford. They produced a documentary about the ship, and it's going to air on GPB next Tuesday, the 13th. Now, Tyler, the Wanderer was operating when the slave trade, transatlantic slave trade, was illegal in the U.S., but domestic slave trade very lucrative. The Emancipation Proclamation didn't come until 1863. So why did the traders who ran the Wanderer end up on trial?
Ooh, good question. Well, they were eventually discovered, and three of the crewmen were actually arrested, and they went to trial. But of course, the trial they were acquitted, and then it was the start of the Civil War. But they did have a trial. Even the yacht was confiscated by the government. It was actually used for a time during the Civil War. In later years, it was carrying fruit and actually sunk off the coast of Cuba. But the trial was a big story. It was announced around the world via the telegraph. So it was a big trial, but of course, the three crewmen were acquitted.
So, John, I understand that President James Buchanan himself got involved with this high-profile trial. What did he do?
Absolutely. Buchanan came to Buchanan's attention, so he sent down the Attorney General of the United States to be involved in the trial. There also was a Justice of the Supreme Court as well. So it was, as Tyler says, about as high-profile as you could get, but there's this wonderful soundbite in there from Vonette Goodwalker, who's just a marvelous and wonderful woman. She does tours around the Savannah area, and she said that all of this happened over a year, and as she kind of laughs to herself, a lot can happen in a year in Savannah. The ship disappears, the slaves disappear, the evidence disappears, and as Tyler says, everybody went scot-free. Charlie Lamar never faced justice for this. The three crewmen who were jailed for it went free. It was a verdict of not guilty.
What happened to all of those who were, 400-odd who landed on Jekyll Island?
Jim Jordan, who's one of the folks interviewed in the book and an historian, talks about it. There was a group that went up into South Carolina. There was a group that he thinks went over to the Satilla River. And then, as you indicated, there were about 40 or so who remained in Georgia. And it's really those 40 or so people who we have the greatest opportunity to find anything about. We're now at the place where it's kind of the great-great-grandchildren. And as we identified in the documentary, the famous NFL star and actor Jim Brown was a great-great-grandson of a Wanderer captive. A woman who was the first African-American woman on the Supreme Court in Nassau County in New York was a great-great-granddaughter. The Double Mint Twins from that advertising campaign. And then we've got our very own wonderful Griffin Lotson, who, as I discovered yesterday for the first time, played a part in Roots, which I didn't know about.
What was that, Griffin?
Yeah, that was very exciting. I told him I would have worked for free the opportunity to work with Roots and its rich history. Basically, I work with a group, and it's called the Geechee Gullah Ring Shouters. We headquarters out of Darien, Georgia, McIntosh County, which you might be familiar with, the famous Weeping Time, which mm-hmm. is similar to the Wanderer. And so through that, they needed someone to give the real history of how the ring shout was conducted on the plantations. And out of the millions of people on this planet, they called me, and we choreographed that full scene when Kuta Kinte was escaping the very first time and the ring shout was performed. So it was a historical moment for me, a legacy for my kids, my grandkids, and for the world long after I'm dead and gone, that history will be there of how the Africans did the ring shout, and we kept it alive here in America on the plantations.
Well, Griffin, I'm guessing that they called you because you are an historian of this culture and a great interpreter and teller of this tale. But I understand that at one time you wanted your identity, your Gullah Geechee identity, concealed. You didn't talk about it. You didn't tell people about it. Why?
Yeah, I at first, when I was a young person, I did not know it was others just like me. And after being an adult, Clarence Thomas is about 6 years older than myself, and I heard about him. I've met him, and we have talked as Gullah Geechees, and that was refreshing. He laid aside all of that professionalism, and we just what we call chew the fat. And he, too, had the same problem, which was you were considered unlearned. You could not get ahead in life if you were Gullah Geechee. So I started practicing to sing my words like I'm from New York. Like I would say, how are you doing? Well, this is a very lovely day. So I practiced not to say, come ya de sha that day, and my words slip out. I still try to talk proper, but everybody asks me, where are you from? And then I chuckle, and because I'm Gullah Geechee, descendant of West Africa. So, yes, we pretty much wanted to disown it. Now, both Clarence Thomas and myself, we embrace it because you should never be ashamed of your culture.
Well, you mentioned the story of the Weeping Time. What can you tell us about the connection between the Wanderer and the Weeping Time? This is largest sale of human beings ever in the United States.
Yes, both from nearby islands. You have Jekyll Island, then you have St. Simon Island, and you have Darien, Georgia. That's where I'm from, McIntosh County, and we keep that history alive. Perhaps some of those 40s that were left perhaps was traded off to one of the butlers. And my understanding, as I'm learning from John and others, is that the Wanderer had money problems, and the same thing happened to Pierce Butler. He had a lot of debt, so he sold all of these families, and there's some beautiful stories how people were torn apart and never saw their families again, and mm-hmm. those that wanted to get married. And I've been in plays for the same reason that you said, the movie Roots, because of the history I bring. So, yes, the tie-in is close. I have not done the research to see whether any of that 40 was sold off to the Butler Plantation, but it's a possibility. And that was a horrific time. Ann Bailey did a book called Weeping Time now in depicting some of this real life history.
Yeah, I understand. There was the rain just poured down on that day. John, yeah. You're nodding.
Yeah, one of the other people who's involved in this, Dr. Felicia Bell, who's interviewed in the documentary, who's now heading up the Rosa Parks Museum down in Montgomery for Troy, was very, very focused on the same story. And they are very parallel because Charlie Lamar got involved in this Wanderer scheme because he was broke, mm-hmm. as Jim Jordan says. And the same situation occurred, as Griffin was saying, with this other gentleman out of the Southeast. He had real money problems. He owed a lot of people a lot of money, and his scheme was to sell over 400 slaves in a given weekend. They did it over the weekend. The heavens opened up. The rains poured down. And everybody said it was kind of sympathetic weeping from the heavens to go along with the weeping from all of those more than 400 slaves who were being, families were being torn apart. They would, mothers and children, husbands and wives, they would never see each other again. It's a horrible, horrible time. It took place down at a racetrack just below Savannah that doesn't exist anymore. But Dr. Bell was talking about the possibility of maybe doing a documentary to focus on that story, because again, both of them arose out of money and the need for money fast.
Well, I guess there are no end of subjects for documentaries for you here in Georgia. But John, just wondering, we've got half a minute left. Earlier this year, Zora Neale Hurston's book about Barracoon, the story of the last black cargo that came over on the Clotilde and crashed, went aground at Mobile Bay. So how did the books like hers and documentaries like yours change the way that we consider the history of race and oppression here in the U.S.?
Well, that's hopefully why we did the documentary in the first place. These are certainly interesting times we're in these days. This was a horrible story that took place 160 years ago. We're hoping when people see it that they'll go, we don't need to do this again. We don't need to treat people like that.
No.
So we're hopeful.
John Weatherford, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And Tyler Bagwell, thank you.
Thank you.
John and Tyler are producers of a documentary about the ship The Wanderer, airs on GPB this coming Tuesday, November 13th. Griffin Lotson, such a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we're hearing a 1926 recording of Kumbaya as sung by a Gullah Geechee man. His name was H. Wiley. First known recording of the song. Coming up, Rick Grimes is off The Walking Dead, TV show at least. We're going to speak with Kalina Buller, host of The Credits, when On Second Thought continues.